From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, we begin our week-long holiday series, Words and Music, featuring songwriters performing and discussing their songs. We'll also pay tribute to a couple of great songwriters from the past. We'll begin with a concert of Cole Porter songs performed by Barbara Lee. Also, we'll celebrate Christmas by listening back to some great Christmas music as performed on Fresh Air. We'll hear from the team who wrote Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and rock historian Ed Ward will play some of the schlockiest music that comes back to haunt us each year at this time. And film critic John Powers reviews Evita, starring Madonna, and Portrait of a Lady, adapted by Jane Campion. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. There are two competing demonstrations going on in Belgrade for and against the regime of Serbian President Slobodan Milosevic. Fighting has broken out, and one anti-government demonstrator has been shot. It's not known what his condition is. Observers estimate 300,000 anti-government protesters took to the streets today, protesting the Milosevic government. But they met about 50,000 socialist pro-government demonstrators who were bussed in for a special rally. The BBC's Paul Wood is in Belgrade. He says the competing groups collided on the same street.
The two crowds were allowed to converge exactly at the same point. The two routes met. The socialists chose their rally for exactly the same time, exactly the same place. The opposition will say this was a case of orchestration, especially as the police made no attempt to keep the two sides apart initially, and that's when the first clashes began. The later clashes, apparently, the police have interposed themselves between the two sides, but they've turned their backs on the socialists, and reports we're getting from eyewitnesses suggest they've turned on the opposition.
Paul Wood reporting. The U.S. peace envoy to the Middle East says no deal has been reached yet on the Israeli troop pullout from the West Bank town of Hebron. Envoy Dennis Ross says Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat met today but did not conclude any agreement. Ross says the meeting was extremely productive and moved both sides closer to agreement. A federal judge has blocked California's voter-approved ban on affirmative action programs. The judge barred state officials from enforcing Proposition 209 until its constitutionality is tested at trial. NPR's Richard Gonzalez reports.
Chief U.S. District Court Judge Thelton Henderson says Prop 209 is probably unconstitutional because it eliminates the rights of women and minorities to seek remedies for past and present discrimination. Henderson's ruling came in a 67-page decision in which he agreed with civil rights groups that Prop 209 alters the political process. Civil rights advocates praised the ruling, but supporters of Prop 209 accused the judge of thwarting California voters who had approved the measure by a 54% margin. UC Regent and Prop 209 campaign chief Ward Connerly said the American system of government is being severely tested. Judge Henderson did not set a trial date for Prop 209. Attorney General Dan Lundgren says he will appeal the preliminary injunction. I'm Richard Gonzalez in San Francisco.
Tennessee officials confirm the assassin of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. has been hospitalized. A spokeswoman for the State Department of Corrections says James Earl Ray is in critical condition with an undisclosed ailment. The Tennessean newspaper reports Ray suffers from liver failure. A Nashville television station is reporting that Ray is near death, but does not identify its source. On Wall Street, the Dow is up more than 24 points at 65.13. This is NPR. Marxist rebels in Peru continue to hold 140 hostages in the Japanese ambassador's home in Lima. The hostage crisis is a week old today, and the stalemate between the rebels and the Peruvian government is no closer to a solution. More than 200 captives were let go late Sunday night, and some of them are urging negotiation to end the siege. But the Peruvian government won't give in to rebel demands, and the rebels haven't changed their position either. A new study finds a common dietary supplement may help prevent people from getting certain kinds of cancer or even dying from cancer. But some researchers are skeptical. NPR's Vicky Quay reports.
Since the 1960s, studies done on animals have suggested the trace element selenium may help prevent tumors, but studies in humans have been less conclusive. Now, researchers at the Arizona Cancer Center say a study they conducted found that people who took daily doses of selenium were far less likely to develop lung, colorectal, and prostate cancers than people who took a dummy pill. The study also found that there were 50% fewer cancer deaths in the selenium group. Other researchers cautioned that the results need to be replicated because the study was initially designed to measure whether selenium could help prevent skin cancer, which it didn't. They also say it's not clear that selenium would benefit women, since most of the study's participants were men. The study appears in the latest journal of the American Medical Association. I'm Vicki Quay in Washington.
Cleanup crews continue to unload tons of corn from a crippled freighter that crashed into the New Orleans riverfront. Authorities hope this will let the disabled ship float. They could then tow it away from the accident site. Officials are using sonar to determine when it will be safe to do this. The freighter lost power and smashed into a mall 10 days ago. Several people were hurt and about 100 stores were damaged. Miraculously, no one was killed. I'm Corva Coleman in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we start a special series for the holidays called Words and Music, featuring songwriters performing and discussing their own songs. Plus, we'll present a couple of tributes to great songwriters of the past. In the next few days, we'll hear from the McGarrigle sisters, Willie Nelson, Lucinda Williams, Loudon Wainwright, the late Arthur Alexander, and Richard Thompson. Our series will conclude New Year's Day with Dawn Upshaw's tribute to Rodgers and Hart. We begin the series with a tribute to Cole Porter, featuring Barbara Lee. John S. Wilson described Lee as one of the most knowledgeable interpreters and collectors of popular songs. She made her first recording in the mid-50s. Our concert was recorded in 1991 to commemorate the 100th anniversary of Cole Porter's birth. Accompanying Barbara Lee was Tony Tamburello, who often accompanied Tony Bennett in performance and had worked as Frank Sinatra's rehearsal pianist. Tamburello has since passed away. Here's Barbara Lee.
This song is from Jubilee, the show which gave us Begin the Begin and Just One of Those Things. And it concerned, I think, a native princess on a South Sea island dreaming of Hollywood and the States and romance and so on. Very lovely ballad. All my life I've been so secluded, love has eluded me. But from knowing secondhand what I'd do of it, I feel certain I could stand a closer view of it. Till today I've studied love discreetly, but now that I'm completely free, I must find some kind persona grata to give me data personally. When romance passes by, why shouldn't I know of love? Why wait around when each age has a sage who has found that upon this earth love is all that is really worth thinking of. It must be fun, lots of fun, to be sure when day is done that the hour coming when you'll be kissed, and then you'll be kissed again. All debutantes say it's good, and every star out in far Hollywood seems to give it a try. So why shouldn't I?
That's beautiful. Well, we're here to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the birth of Cole Porter. Tell me, if you could, what makes Cole Porter singular to you, why you love his songs, what makes him different from other composers?
Gosh, you know, each great composer has his own particular way of writing. Cole Porter had a wonderful musical ear as well as wonderful musical training. And one thing that he did was very vary the melody slightly in each eight bars. He'd go da-da in one, and then da-da, and then da-da, and he'd would do little variations, so it wasn't just the straight repetition. And they were very rich musically. The lyrics, of course, he was incomparably romantic. I really don't think any other lyric writer was as unabashedly passionate as Cole Porter, and at the same time he had, of course, the marvelous cleverness, the great knowledge to write those laundry list songs of his and so on. And yet they weren't simply laundry lists. The way he shifted the interior rhymes around, people think rhymes are just rhymes. Not at all. Rhymes have everything to do with the rhythm of a song, the line length and so on. They just have everything to do with the variety of a song. It almost doesn't matter what the rhyme is so much as where it's placed. And of course, if he sets something up, which he often does, he'll set it up so that you're expecting a certain rhyme, and he'll give you something else. He just had everything going for him.
How about another song?
Oh, all right. This song is from a rather early Cole Porter show. I'm ashamed to say I can't remember the name of the show, but he wrote it, I believe, in the 20s while he was living in Paris and studying composition with Nadia Boulanger. And the verse particularly just shows the astonishing things that he was able to do, whether because of the influence of this legendary composer trainer or not, I don't know. But of course, it has that wonderful Cole Porter naughtiness. Since first you crossed my horizon with your load of love charms, I spend my whole time devising means to stay in your arms. There must be some tricky treatment that would cool my brain, for to me it's so plain, and you'll admit the fact that I'm practically sane. You're a bad influence on me. Sorry, but you're a bad influence, I must say. For I get in such a dither when you use your famous come hither, that all thought of hame and mither seems to wither away. The thing your eyes do to me is such folly that I feel sure your middle name must be Svengali. You throw me right off of my stride. Still, I beg of you, stay by my side and be a bad influence on me. I'm sure you used to say black mass with Rasputin. I wish you'd cease singeing my wings, but before you do, take off your things and be a bad influence. on me.
That was great. It's a wonderful lyric. It must be really nice to sing songs that you can sing with conviction because the lyric's so well written, you don't have to be embarrassed by any lines.
Yes. Sometimes you get a request for a song that isn't well written, and then it's really a test. It's really a challenge to think, what am I going to do? This is such a nice person. I want to do this song for this person. What can I do to it to make this lyric come alive? And what can I do to get over these embarrassing places? Often you find you just have to go counter to the intent of a song. Sometimes it'll be so ridiculously romantic that you have to take it very casually, or sometimes it's a kind of casual, hard-boiled song that you have to bring romance to. It's just...
Can you think of an example?
No. No.
Barbara Lee, I want to find out a little bit about you.
Oh, all right.
Now, you started recording back in 1955.
Yes.
What were you like then? How was your voice different? What were you singing?
My voice was very much the same, except that for the last 5 years or so, I've been solvent, so I've been able to take voice lessons.
You're taking voice lessons now?
Now. I've just started, and it's wonderful, and it hasn't changed my voice at all, except it's easier. Everything flows more easily now. It's opened up the range. I've got a little more range on top and a little more on the bottom. Basically, I've had the same range since I was a tiny child. So, you know, people would say, you're Barbara Leacock. I haven't seen you since you were 4 years old. I'd know you anywhere by your voice.
Barbara Leacock, huh?
That was me.
That was your real name?
Yes, from Detroit.
And you changed it to Barbara Lee to perform?
Yes.
We're featuring a 1991 concert with Barbara Lee. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back to our concert with Barbara Lee, which was recorded in 1991 to commemorate the 100th anniversary of Cole Porter's birth.
When we asked you to do the concert, we asked you to do some songs that we'd all know and a couple of songs that would be discoveries for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the song you're about to do is something that's going to be a discovery for us.
Yes, I hope so. I've never heard anyone else do it. I just found a piece of sheet music in Lincoln Center Library. It was sung by the mother of the debutante in, I think, the New Yorkers. Not the New Yorkers. Oh, goodness, I'm going to goof everything. Paris? 50 Million Frenchmen. That's it. He wrote so many Paris shows and so many New York shows, I get them mixed up. 50 Million Frenchmen. What is that, my note?
You like that one?
Give me a card. Don't give me a note. My mother and father once went to a lot of bother to make me the happiest of girls. To further my station, they gave me an education, not to mention a string of pearls. But in spite of my backing, I still feel there's something lacking, and that fate has rather let me down. For instead of being famous, I'm an unknown ignoramus from a small Middle Western town. Why couldn't I have been Salome, or Mary Pickford, or Joan of Arc? If I were Eleanor Glynn, or even Anne Boleyn, the the future wouldn't look half so dark. Why couldn't I be Whistler's mother or any other woman of note? Why did the gods decree that I should only be the Queen of Terra Haute?
That's great. So you found that on sheet music.
Yes.
And you've never heard it performed?
No. Mm-mm.
You think it's recorded anywhere?
I don't know. Huh. I don't know. I know it's from the 20s. I can just see Mary Boland or somebody kind of wandering out onto a stage disconsolately. For some reason, I see her with a suitcase in her hand.
So this is the kind of thing you do a lot, just go searching for sheet music of obscure songs.
Oh, yes. Yes, it's my favorite pastime.
And we'll contrast that with a very well-known song that you're about to sing for us.
When they begin the begin, it brings back the sound of music so tender. It brings back a night of tropical splendor. It brings back a memory evergreen. I'm with you once more under the stars, and down by the shore an orchestra's playing, and even the palms seem to be swaying when they begin the begin. To live it again is past all endeavor, except when that tune clutches my heart, and there we are swearing to love forever, promising never, never to part. What moments divine, what rapture serene, till clouds came along to disperse the joys we had tasted. And now when I hear people curse the chance that was wasted, I know but too well what they mean. So don't let them begin the begin. Let the love that was once a fire remain an ember. Let it sleep like the dead desire I only remember. When they begin the begin. Let them begin the begin, make them play, till the stars that were there before return above you, till you whisper to me once more, darling, I love you. And we suddenly know what heaven we're in when they begin the begin.
That's beautiful. I think that's the saddest and most felt version of that I've ever heard. It's usually much more kind of up-tempo and
yes.
danceable. And
yeah.
Tell me about thinking through the song and deciding it to do it that way.
Well, all I can tell you is that you have to know the story before you can tell the story. People are so interested in selling their sadness or selling their joy or whatever it is, but they don't ever bother to feel that. And I just, you know, I was an actress for many years, and I know what that song's about from my life. If I didn't know what it was about from my life, I'd know what it was about from my imagination. And I tell the story. That's all. And I love it. I love that. I think it's possibly the greatest song ever written. I know it's never been done this way. And I know if they try, they won't be able. So this song is mine. New York, New York is Liza Minnelli's. This one is mine.
Barbara Lee, recorded in 1991. The pianist was the late Tony Tamborello. Barbara Lee has a new CD paying tribute to women songwriters called Fine and Dandy. It's on the European label Challenge. Our Barbara Lee concert was recorded to celebrate the 100th anniversary of Cole Porter's birth. Let's hear from Porter himself. This 1952 recording was made in his apartment. Porter is at the piano playing and singing a song he wrote for the musical Can Can. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Love comes in and takes you for a spin, ooh la la la. C'est magnifique. When every night your loved one holds you tight, ooh la la la. C'est one drifts away, ooh la la la. It is so tragique. But when once more he whispers, je t'adore, c'est
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Borders, where the love of books and music sets the standard. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Christmas is one of the busiest times of the year for movie openings. Among the films opening this week in New York and L.A. are Jane Campion's Portrait of a Lady, starring Nicole Kidman, and the much-anticipated Evita with You Know Who. John Powers has a review of both films.
Don't cry for me, Argentina. I kept my promise, don't keep your distance.
Before they'd even finished making Evita, I'd been bombarded by so much hype that I felt as if I'd personally fathered Madonna's child. Yet despite the publicity, the movie's actually worth a trip to the theater. Madonna stars as Eva Perón, whose life is one of the great stories of our century. A poor girl from the provinces, Eva climbed the social ladder on her back, ultimately marrying the famous caudillo Juan Perón. And because she rose from the ignored masses and embodied their dreams in glamorous form, Eva became a beloved figure, the bleach blonde saint known as Evita. Her story was directed by Alan Parker of Mississippi Burning and Commitments fame, and it's easily his best work, an explosion of Hollywood opulence. Tanks roll through city streets, thousands of extras crowd the plazas to hear Evita sing. Every scene is designed and photographed with a thrilling extravagance of an earlier American era. The movie features Madonna's best performance since Desperately Seeking Susan. In fact, it's hard to imagine anybody else playing Evita, since Madonna's iconic stature, her own blonde ambition, gives the role a special oomph. And she's in surprisingly good voice, as is obvious from the film's best song.
I don't expect my love affairs to last for long. Never fool myself that my dreams will come true. Being used to trouble, I anticipate it, but all the same I hate it. Wouldn't you? So what happens now? So what happens now? Where am I going to? Where am I going to?
In every cinematic way, Evita is a triumph. But the movie's dragged down by the material. Andrew Lloyd Webber's original pop opera plays down the dirty details of Evita's politics. Juan Perón, after all, was a corrupt tyrant. And it serves up some of the deadliest music in decades, a bombastic blend of 70s power pop and musical theater canoodling that caused my ears to run shrieking from the theater. No one has ever filmed opera more dazzlingly than Alan Parker does here. The only pity is that Evita is probably the worst opera that's ever been filmed. Adapting The Portrait of a Lady poses an opposite problem. It's dauntingly great. But Jane Campion is the most audacious filmmaker now working anywhere, and she's made Henry James' novel her own, deliberately refusing to make just another period piece. In the best performance of her career, Nicole Kidman plays Isabel Archer, a young American woman pursued by three wealthy, attractive, generous men. But Isabel's desire for freedom belongs to the mid-20th century, not the 1870s, and she gets lured into marrying a dilettante named Osmond, played by John Malkovich, whose direct sexuality and unconventional ideas make him a much more modern figure than her other suitors. Isabel thinks she's found a kindred spirit, but she's actually married a monster. Her life goes from being an extended garden party to a journey into the underworld. The Portrait of a Lady has stretches of absolute brilliance, but it's also somewhat forbidding. The opening hour is icy cold, and Isabel starts out a bit too ferocious. When we first see her, she seems more like Judy Davis than an open-hearted American girl loved by everyone. And then there's the miscasting of Osmond. Malkovich has played the snake so many times that Isabel seems slightly dim not to realize that he's a rotter, especially since her doting cousin Ralph sees through him even before her marriage.
I don't understand you.
I should have said that the man for you would have had a more active, larger, freer sort of nature. I can't get over the sense that Osmond is somehow, well, small.
Small?
I think he's narrow, selfish, takes himself so seriously. He's the incarnation of taste.
His taste is exquisite.
You ever seen such a taste, a really exquisite one, Ruffle?
I hope I will never fail to gratify my husband's.
Oh, that's capital. That's wonderful. That's what every wife would wish for. But weren't you meant for something better than to keep guard over the sensibilities of a sterile dilettante?
At bottom, The Portrait of a Lady offers a profound exploration of women's experience of freedom and entrapment. At the beginning, Isabel apparently has all the prerequisites of freedom: beauty, intelligence, courage, and money. But freedom is never granted so easily, especially to women. And it's Isabel's fate to live in a world in which her apparent liberty is easily devoured by a husband, a scheming female friend whose own dreams of freedom have already been vanquished, and her own ambivalence about herself and her marriage. By the film's ambiguous finale, we realize that freedom is not something that we are given, but that we must take, bit by painful bit, from history and experience, with no guarantee of success. It's a lesson that, in her own way, Evita Perón would have understood.
John Powers is film critic for Vogue. Coming up, the good, the bad, and the ugly of holiday music. This is Fresh Air. We're going to take a slight detour from this week's Words and Music series to revive a Fresh Air Christmas Eve tradition, playing some great and regrettable seasonal music from our archives and from the archives of our rock historian, Ed Ward. Let's face it, in addition to all the good cheer and goodwill the holiday season brings, there's also a lot of schlock music. Rock and roll historian Ed Ward has selected some of his favorite awful Christmas music.
You know, I finally figured out what makes the record industry flood us with Christmas songs each year. The answer is Gene Autry, right, the cowboy? There he was, fading as a singing cowboy movie star, when he wrote Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, thereby assuring his fortune for the rest of his life. So every year, there must be hundreds of hopefuls who remember that and give it a shot on their own. I wish they'd give up. Really, the vast majority of pop Christmas music is enough to make me think about turning into a Hindu. Well, maybe not. There's lots of terrible Indian pop music, too. But you know what I mean. You don't? Okay, you asked for it.
Mamacita. That he will leave. Mamacita, oh, where is Santa Claus? I look for him because it's Christmas Eve. I know that I should be the sleeping, but maybe he's not far away. So out of the window I'm peeping, hoping
there it was, 1958, and I was an innocent 10-year-old who just discovered rock and roll. I had the radio on constantly, and just as constantly, I was forced to endure little Augie Rios singing Donde Está Santa Claus. The history of U.S. Central American relations is one of us interfering with them. I've always considered Augie Rios to be an act of naked aggression going the other way. But he was only the worst of a bad lot.
Bushels of fun. Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bell,
there was Bobby Helms with Jingle Bell Rock, the same man who gave us My Special Angel. But My Special Angel only charted once. I had to endure Jingle Bell Rock in 1957, 58, 60, 61, and 62. Strangely enough, there doesn't seem to have been a big Christmas hit in 59, although you can count on the radios having played the Chipmunk song and the ever-dreadful Harry Simeon Chorale's Little Drummer Boy. Maybe the idea was to get you to go to church where the music would have to be better. Of course, back then, I was ignorant of the fact that there was some actual cool Christmas music. Even though it was, at that time, the best-selling rhythm and blues single ever, Charles Brown's Merry Christmas Baby never came on New York's top 40 stations. Nor did some of the more irreverent stuff, like the Youngsters' only known record.
Christmas in jail, Christmas in jail, had a little too much to drink. Ain't got no bail, ain't got no bail, and I'm spending New Year's Eve in the clink. I was in the wrong lane, feeling no pain, suit my car to 75, ran right into, you can guess who, and they say I'm lucky to be alive.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
They're singing down the street, while everybody's having Christmas turkey. They give me bread and water to eat. Christmas in jail.
Over the years, some of my friends have done some fairly intensive Christmas research and have come up with some amazing records. Brian Cullman, for instance, has put out an hour-long tape every year for almost a decade with stuff that ranges from the most saccharine sentimentality to Zulu choirs from South Africa. And this year, the legendary record collector Eddie Gorodetsky released a CD on Columbia called Christmas with Eddie G, with a really eclectic collection on it, including Little Augie Rios, in case you thought I actually went out looking for that. So yes, there is good Christmas popular music out there, as those things go. But probably the best thing about Christmas music is that after Christmas Day, you don't have to listen to it again for, oh, at least 10.5 months. And having said that, I'd like to leave you with a bit of my favorite Christmas record, from the Temptations' otherwise undistinguished album, Give Love at Christmas. I'm sure you'll recognize it.
As I sit around by the fireplace, watching the gleaming tree, if I had one wish in this world,
our rock and roll historian Ed Ward is now living in Berlin. I share some of his feelings that Christmas is a bad season for music, but Ed Ward has some Christmas music he really likes, and so do I. In fact, some of it was recorded right here on Fresh Air, and I want to replay some of it for you. To start, we have a concert recording of one of the songs Ed described as cool Christmas music. The record was the best-selling rhythm and blues single of its time. The song is Merry Christmas Baby, and the composer is Charles Brown. Brown had 9 top 10 R&B singles between 1946 and 52. A few years ago, with the help of Bonnie Raitt, he launched a comeback. This is from a concert Charles Brown performed for us in June of 1989. And even though Christmas was far away, I asked him to perform the Christmas song so many people know him for.
They know me for that. No care where I go, whatever time of year, Terry.
We have about 2.5 minutes left, so let's see how as much of that as we can get in.
Okay.
Okay.
Christmas, baby, you sure did treat me nice. Merry Christmas, baby, sure did treat me nice. gave me a diamond ring for Christmas. Now I'm living in paradise. Well, I'm feeling mighty fine. Got good music on my stereo. Feeling mighty fine. Got good music on my radio. Well, I wanna kiss you, baby, while you're standing beneath the mistletoe. Satan coming down the chimney yet, too.
Charles Brown from a 1989 Fresh Air concert. In 1988, we invited Susanna McCorkle to perform a Christmas concert. McCorkle records for Concord Records, and her latest CD is a tribute to Cole Porter. In her Christmas concert, she performed a song that always has special meaning to people who are spending the holidays far from their loved ones.
Christmas, you can count on me. Please have snow and mistletoe.
Susanna McCorkle from her 1988 Fresh Air Christmas concert. Lee Musiker accompanied her at the piano with Dean Johnson on bass. Coming up, the story of one of the most beautiful Christmas songs as told by the composers themselves. This is Fresh Air. Thank you. lot of jazz musicians say that the Christmas song with the most interesting chord changes is Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. The song was written for the movie musical Meet Me in St. Louis, a Broadway adaptation premiered in late 1989. And for the occasion, we invited Hugh Martin and Ralph Blaine, who wrote the songs for the original musical and the revival. Ralph Blaine died 1 year ago at the age of 81. In 1989, I asked Martin and Blaine to tell the story of how they wrote Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas for Judy Garland. Before we hear the story, let's hear the song as performed on their 1956 recording, Martin and Blaine Sing Martin and Blaine, which has been reissued on CD.
When the steeple bells sound their A, they don't play it in tune, but the welkin will ring one day. Soon, have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year, all our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a make the Yuletide.
Tell me the story behind writing the song.
Well, it began with the melody. I found a little madrigal-like tune that I liked but couldn't make work. So I played with it for 2 or 3 days, and then I threw it in the wastebasket and forgot about it. But Ralph, bless his heart, tell her how you reacted.
I remembered that little melody, and it kept haunting me. And I came into the room one day, and I said, Hugh, what did you do with that little melody that you were fooling around with at the piano, that was like a madrigal? He says, I threw it in the wastebasket. I said, oh, no. I've got a great idea. You mustn't do that. Let's get it. And so we dug around in the wastebasket, and we found it. Thank the Lord we found it.
Yes. And then we wrote a lyric which nobody liked, especially Judy, because it was extremely sad and tragic. Can you sing it the way it was, Ralph?
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. It may be your last. Next year we will all be living in the past. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Pop that champagne cork. Next year we will all be living in New York.
And we thought that was just dandy because it was a sad scene. But they said, no, it's a sad scene, but we want a sort of an upbeat song which will make it even sadder if she's smiling through her tears. So then we wrote the one that you know in the movie. And then there was another version, Ralph.
One day, Frank Sinatra called us and said he wanted to record the song, but he couldn't sing the line about, until then we'll have to muddle through somehow. So he said, give me a happy line and I'll record the song.
It was because of the title of his album, which was A Jolly Christmas. So he wanted us to jolly it up a bit.
And Hugh came up with the line, hang a shining star upon the highest bough. And Sinatra was delighted and recorded the song. In fact, he's recorded it 3 times.
Hugh Martin and the late Ralph Blaine, recorded in 1989. Here's Judy Garland, recorded in 1943.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year all troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. Next year all our troubles will be miles away. Again, as in olden days, happy golden days of yore. Faithful friends who were dear to us will be near to us once more. Someday soon we all will be together.
Judy Garland, recorded in 1943. Fresh Air's senior producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer was Bob Purdick. Our interviews and reviews are produced by Naomi Person, Phyllis Myers, Amy Sallet, and Roberta Shurrock, with Tracy Tannenbaum. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Alan Tu directed the show. I'm Cherie Gross. All of us at Fresh Air wish you a Merry Christmas.
Say, when he finds everybody swinging, what will Santa Claus say when he hears us sing, sing, singing? Down the chimney he will come with his great big smile, and he'll find that even the kiddies are swinging in a latest style.
Oh, oh, oh,
what is Santa bringing?
Oh, oh, oh,
I wonder whether he'll be swinging everywhere in the land. All the people will be singing,
la da di da, di-hi-di-hi.
Now what is Santa Claus gonna say when he finds everybody swinging? Oh, what will Santa Claus say when he finds everybody?
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, as our Words and Music series continues, we'll hear from the Cole Porter of the Muppet World, Sesame Street songwriter Jeff Moss. Also, Kate and Anna McGarrigle sing and talk about their songs. I'm Terry Gross. I hope you'll join us for the next Fresh Air.